This is Dairy Radio Now with Bill Baker.
The idea of genomics as a mainstream's only been around a decade, and joining us on today's PDPW Producer Tuesday is Dr. Kent Weigel, professor and chair of the Department of Animal and Dairy Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's here to discuss the latest in genomic traits.
Just briefly, how genomics works. Cattle genome sequence happened around 2005. 2009 was the first kind of widely available genomic testing. It was really expensive, right? It was $225 or $250 per test, which is great if you have a bull at an AI stud or you have a donor. Not so great if you want to test your replacement heifers. So then in like 2010, 11, 12, here and with some collaborators was, how do you make this cheaper? And that led to the introduction of all these new chips that offer $35, $45 an animal. So it reduced the price 5 or 6 or 8 fold from what it was initially. And that allowed the technology to just then explode, right? Because technology that you can't afford is not that valuable.
Comments from Dr. Kent Weigel from the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the latest regarding genomic traits.
The newer traits, specifically feed intake, is the hardest of these because it's only measured on a few thousand animals in this genetic reference population. The folks who provide this index, lifetime net merit, had to change the way they did it. They calculated these relative values, not quite as accurate, so we want to put less weight on it. Most of the other traits are measured on the national population. The health traits, most of the farms provide data, so those are pretty accurate, at least like 70% reliability, whereas the feed efficiency is much, much lower. Milk yield, protein yield, in that case, going up. You see some other traits not necessarily going up. So female fertility is one that declined until recently, especially in Holsteins, also in Jersey. It's leveling off now because we added, after 2000, I think 2003 or 4 or something, we added daughter pregnancy rate, and we've added a few other measures. So that one's leveling off. And so sometimes it's a matter of improving the things you like. Sometimes it's a matter of protecting the things that you don't want to give up. So maybe offense is selecting for higher protein yield. Defense is making sure that daughter preg rate or other measures of female fertility don't get too low. So steps we have to go through, and the big one is reference population. You got to have a bunch of animals where you have their genetic test results and you have measured the trait that you care about. It's really been integrated into the existing genetic evaluation program almost seamlessly once you have that reference population. You can use the same management tools. I think that's the one clear message. Some of these things like the sex and beef semen and allocating that to really be planful in your replacement heifers 2 years from now. I think that is a big thing that you could do with or without genomics. You'll do it better with genomics more accurately, but that you can do. There was an announcement here not long ago, a few weeks from BAS, that they're going to partner with Zoetis so the genomic data flows right back in to all your tools that you use in Dairy Comp. I think that's going to be really nice. I haven't tried it yet because I don't think it's actually live, but I think that's been a challenge, is that you always had to deal with, here's how I manage my herd over here, and my genetic selection stuff is over here. It's like two different things. They really shouldn't be. It should be all part of the overall management. Herd management includes planning what my herd will look like in 2 or 3 years and how I create that, right? It shouldn't be kind of, I do manage my herd in the daytime and then, oh, at night I look at the genetics, but that's a totally unrelated thing, right?
It's Dr. Kent Weigel, professor and chair of the Department of Animal and Dairy Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And those were comments from a recent PDPW Dairy Signal that you can hear in its entirety for free at pdpw.org. Just click on the Dairy Signal. And our thanks to the professional dairy producers for today's sponsorship of Producer Tuesday.
It is becoming a growing part of various agritourism operations across the country. Fishing ponds. Chuck Sikra of University of Florida Extension offers examples of what this looks like across the country.
In Florida, we have a lot of 20, 30, 40 acre, quote unquote, ponds. People don't fish them a lot, so they may actually lease them to a small group of people, a family, just like people lease hunting lands for, say, deer hunting, quail hunting, and restrict who can have access to it. But we also have ponds that people will charge so many dollars per day, and the public can come in and drop money off. Often it's a mailbox and go fish. They're limited how many fish they can keep. And then we have the more intensive, where people stock, say, catfish, and people come in and they fish and they pay by the pound, or they pay a certain amount per day and they get to keep a couple, three fish.
While there are several natural ponds, some agritourism operators construct man-made fishing ponds and stock with native species to catch. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.